Hello, welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. How are we doing? And on this episode, really excited for this one, we'll be talking to David Keat, co-founder of Universal Works. Universal Works was inspired by David's formative years growing up in a provincial Midlands town, part of a working class family that loved to dress well, seeing his dad and uncles in their workwear and also when dressing for the weekend. After initially selling to 10 retailers, Universal Works have gained a substantial following and are now stocked from Los Angeles to Seoul. Their head office and web store is based in Nottingham, and they have 4 Universal Works stores opening in London on Lamb's Conduit Street. That was back in July 2012. Berwick Street in August 2013. Nottingham on Broad Street, March 2016. And again, the latest one in London, the Cold Drops Yard in October 2018. And by the way, we'll be talking about the launch of that shop because it's an incredible venue right in the heart of King's Cross, very central London. But before we get into all that, let me tell you about our website, menswearstyle.co.uk. If you click the member area button on the top right of the homepage, you'll be taken to our discounts and loyalty section. This is where you will see exclusive discounts and privileges from hundreds of your favorite high street brands within fashion, lifestyle, beauty and more. We currently have 20% off at New Balance, 15% off at Hawes & Curtis, 10% off at TM Lewin, and 50% off at Corner Store. That's right, 50. And we've just added some more, 15% off at Aposta, 20% Pursue Fitness, and 35% off MyProtein. So lots of good reasons to go check out the website, apart from all the other blogs, all the other competitions that we run. So menswearstyle.co.uk, that's the place to go. Right, lastly, if you're on the social, type in Menswear Style into your smartphone there, and we'll just come up almost everywhere. If you'd like to get in touch with the show or become a guest and talk about your brand and its journey, then email us at info@menswearstyle.co.uk, okay? Here is that interview with David Keat, co-founder of Universal Works. Wonderful. Well, it's my great pleasure to introduce to the podcast David Keat, joint founder of Universal Works. How are we doing today, David?
Good. Nice, chilly morning in quite sunny Nottingham today.
For the uninitiated, would you mind giving us a thumbnail sketch of you and of Universal Works, please?
Okay, so I guess we are Universal Works. It was begun by myself and my partner Stephanie. We wanted to produce a something that had always been my passion, menswear based on old kind of blue collar workwear and military styling, but with an understanding of a sort of British tailoring, almost like British, classic British clothing. But we wanted that to be a very contemporary and understanding its roots and understanding where it came from. We wanted it to be very much about today and people's lifestyles today, and also in the realms of affordability. That we'd both come from a fashion world where things maybe were aspirational sometimes and less affordable for myself and my friends, and I think we felt we wanted something that was a bit more attainable. So that was the original goal of it. And it's hugely about a massive wardrobe for me, because it's all things that I want and wear. And as a business, I guess, we've got no particular plan to take over the world. We just wanted to put our vision of menswear out into the market and see if we could make a success of that. But we'd had many, many years of working for other people, both of us coming from a product and production background, not a design background, although Stephanie had studied fashion as a design course in Nottingham, actually. But I was not trained. I was not trained in anything, let alone fashion. I just did it because I loved it and got jobs in it and progressed through actually doing it, I guess, through being sitting next to geniuses that I worked with at Paul Smith and Maharishi and various other British menswear designers and thinking I could always do better myself. And finally, I got the opportunity to do it.
I believe the brand started or was launched in 2009. What was the main hurdles of you launching the brand in terms of what were the obstacles that you needed to fight at the time to get universal works off the ground?
I think pretty much the same with any new brand, whether you're straight out of college or you've been doing it for many years. The initial issue is getting your brand in front of the consumer, but there's generally two routes into selling your product, either direct to the consumer or through stores. And if you're selling through stores, you need to get it in front of the buyers of those stores. If they're independent stores, it's usually people who own and work in the store. And if it's a bigger, like a Harrods or a Selfridges or, you know, a bigger company, they'll have separate buyers. And we needed to get the product in front of those people to buy it, to put it in their stores. We went through that route because we didn't have a lot of money and we couldn't open our own stores or launch our own website. And so we wanted to put it into some of our favorite stockists. We needed a showroom where people could see it. That was our route into it. And it's always the biggest, most difficult hurdle to get people convinced to buy your brand rather than someone else's brand.
Because you're an unknown and people don't, I guess, have the confidence in buying an unknown.
You're totally unknown. And I think we started the whole business thinking that it's all about product and delivering that product to that store and that store having the confidence to sell it, and that basically they wouldn't see it again. It's got to be delivered on time, right price, right quality, so that it succeeds with the consumer. And then the stores are happy, they come back and they buy us again. But to get that first initial hurdle over is difficult. I think we were very lucky that we worked with a UK showroom that believed in us, and people believed in that showroom and trusted them that they wouldn't be showing them a product that wouldn't work. And I think we had a number of friends and colleagues in the industry who knew we could deliver. We knew we could do this thing that we'd said we could do. And also then we had enough help with our manufacturing that generally, if you're a new brand and you sell 10 jackets, you can't make 10 jackets, you have to make 100 jackets or 1,000 jackets. And we had enough favors backed up through 25 years in the industry to get people to produce very small numbers, incredibly small numbers, which meant we delivered everything. We always do deliver everything, and we make with people who could make hundreds and thousands of things, but they'll make very, really small numbers for us. So we're the little guys, but that's much, much harder if you're 25 and straight out of college and you've got a new brand and you've got no backing. A shirt maker or a knitwear maker or a sock maker doesn't want to make you your 10 sales. Because you're not reaching a minimum. We managed to persuade people to do that because of the history we had with them.
Well, I can speak from personal experience of running an independent menswear store, probably dialing back about 5 years now, outside of Cambridgeshire. Yeah. And we had your marquee names. It was very much the middle brands, I guess. I mean, Superdry, entry-level, Luke, Lyle and Scott, for example. But then we'd have the very independent, very parochial brands. And I know, being on the shop front floor, it was great to get these brands in, the unknown brands, shall we say. But it was a lot harder to actually sell them to the customer because you had to burn twice as many calories to convince them that this is going to be the next best thing, or this is something that, even though it's roughly the same price as all the other brands you're seeing on the shelves and they recognize those brand names. I actually really liked that part of it, though, because I was actually championing something that people hadn't heard of. And at that time, they wouldn't have seen before anyone else. So, but I do remember vividly those moments in time when it was new brands coming in. And it was a lot harder to shift, but a lot more, the process was more enjoyable.
Yeah. And we recognize that, and we've run small independent stores ourselves. We've had retail. We know that the retailer has the most difficult job, because the guy walking into his store is going to spend real money he's earned somewhere and is passionate about, you know, getting the most for it. When we're selling to a store, we're selling to a guy who loves clothes, otherwise he wouldn't have a store.
Yeah.
So the storekeeper has a much harder job than us, we think, so we want to support them as much as possible. And trying to find someone that is prepared to buy a new brand they've never heard of. We know that if it's you and your store outside Cambridge, if you like it, you buy it and you'll probably wear it, and you've got a massive opportunity to convince the consumer. So you're doing that job by putting it on and going, look, these pants look great, or this shirt looks great. People trust you and they'll start to buy it.
Yeah.
In the end, it's got to keep working. And we're in a situation now, kind of 10, 11 years later, where we have a lot of people who trust us within the industry to provide product that will sell, because that's what they're in business for. But also the consumer, that it does a good job for them, so they keep coming back. And we're still tiny in the world of, fashion. We're still absolutely tiny. But yeah, it's certainly easier today than it was 10, 11 years ago to get someone, to convince someone to buy into your product. Yeah.
The designs for the clothes, now don't let me put words in your mouth, but when I'm looking at the collections and when I've seen Universal Works over the years, I've always thought they're a very classic, but they're very full cut. The workwear jackets in particular have this very blue collar feel.
Yeah.
I know that's very intentional with some of your background. Can you just talk us through the process of how that started and how, like,
Yeah, I guess I'd always had a love of that. What we, in a fashion sense, think of as workwear. I always say blue collar workwear, because workwear today for a lot of young people, in certainly in Europe, would be a suit going to the office. It wouldn't be an overall to protect you in your manual labor job. But those products that I saw my family in as a child, were designed and made for longevity and protection and function. And I think, although I became very obsessed with clothing at a very young age, and kind of dressing up and watching my aunts and uncles get dressed up to go out on a Saturday night when they were from a very kind of working class background, but they wanted to look good at the weekend. And that had a huge effect on me. And I loved the idea of that kind of smarter clothing and wanting to spend money on clothing. But still had that affection or understanding of those functional garments. And I think in menswear, that's something that guys just like and we respond to. But for sure, there was a moment in the sort of cycle of fashion that look was going to be, or was starting to be, interesting again, and moving away from kind of over-designed product, which was an opportunity for me because that's what I always wanted to work with and design. So I guess that was happening 2007, 2008. So we could launch our brand on that ethos at the right time. But still, even now, we have very, very kind of workwear jackets, but we still try and make it in a much more contemporary way than just trying to repeat something from the past. But I guess from a design point of view, a lot of it is looking at and being inspired by the things that are around you. So you're always involved in contemporary culture and contemporary life, so you can't not be affected by that. But yeah, the things that I was around as a kid of, my father had a work jacket on every day because he went to work, and yeah, the sort of protective coverall jacket on. And we named our version of that after him because he was a baker, and I didn't want to call it work jacket, so I called it baker's jacket. Actually, there's lots of those jackets around in the world, and they do perform a great function. It's what you do with it, isn't it? It's how you wear it, what you team it with. And I think all of those products would have been, generally, they would have been looser rather than tighter, because it's hard to wear tight clothes if you're an engineer or a builder or a bricklayer or a baker, for that matter. It doesn't suit what you're doing.
So I think my silhouette was always a little bit looser. And that's taken a while to take off, for sure, because for a long time, you know, guys were wearing very skinny jeans and very skinny tops. And slowly our silhouette of something a little bit looser than that is coming around to being much more acceptable. And I think people responded to the fact that we don't really do a skinny trouser. We tend to do a looser trouser. And a lot of guys have started to get into it. And thankfully for us, it's paying off.
Yeah, and I can talk about the Baker jacket at length with you because, well, I say that, I was debating whether to bring this up with you, David, but I bought the workwear Baker jacket in Cambridge probably, again, about 5 years ago now, and I adored it, and I wore it to death. I think Roger Moore said of Ian Fleming that he wore every one of his suits down to the last thread, and I think that's what people will be saying about me, about that jacket. I adored it, and I still have it. And at the time, I started dating my now girlfriend. She lives in London. At that time, I was living in Cambridge. So I was often referred to as a town mouse and country mouse. I'd have a different wardrobe for wherever I'd be. Now, sadly, by the time I'd met my girlfriend, she didn't like the jacket because I think it had done a few laps around the park, shall we say. It still held up fantastically well, but she comes from a very professional background where she likes to see me dressed in shirts and conventional stuff. So this Baker's jacket was relegated to the country wardrobe, but I still actually enjoy going back to Cambridge now every now and again and having that jacket wait for me at the end of the line. I think, well, this is now me, and this is now the wardrobe that I really want to slip
into. Love it, yeah.
And in fact, if you punch into into YouTube, I did it just before we got on the phone, Universal Works Baker's jacket. I believe I come up in like the top three or four videos. Because I did a review for it on another blog that I did back in the day.
Well, I'm going to check out the video of it as soon as I can.
Oh, please don't get manage your expectations. But I guess that will lead me on to a question. I don't notice any women's wear on your website. I guess this is something that you get asked a lot. Are a lot of the clothes unisex or gender free, as I think people like to call it now? Or?
I mean, we make clothing, and we are, you know, it's the design of that is coming from my vision of what I think men should be wearing, and in reality, what I want to wear, and therefore I'm kind of designing it for me. In the hope that the rest of the world will be interested and we can have a business from it. And for sure, a lot of women buy it. So, you know, in our HQ where I'm sitting now, I think we've probably got slightly more women than men. And everyone, I'd be very surprised if at least half of those women today aren't wearing some Universal Works, possibly more. Often all of them will have something on from our collections. It might be a knitwear, it might be a sweater, it might be jersey. We certainly sell a lot of our, that particular jacket, the Baker's jacket, comes in anything from, you know, simple cotton twill to Harris tweed and beautiful Italian suiting fabrics. And you can wear it in a lot of ways. We sell it to a few women's wear stores around the world who buy it specifically for their women's customers in smaller sizes sometimes, but generally it's exactly the same piece. So we hesitate to call any of it women's wear. And I think just because we, you know, it's not what you would traditionally think of as women's wear, but then women have forever have worn their boyfriend's clothes, haven't they? You know, everyone from, you know, Madonna, you know,
Bianca Jagger
wearing Humphrey Bogart, you know, it's like women wearing men's clothes has often looked very sexy and been very appealing. So it's always had a place in fashion, if you want. But also it's just practical.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our fits will suit a lot of people because they're not super tight and they're hopefully thought through in the way that they should fit more people. And that applies to men and women. Of course, sizing, you know, we're not doing super shaped things. So So if you're a woman that wants something a bit more figure hugging, you're not going to buy our clothes.
Sure.
But I think it's not figure huggy clothing that you know is. It's not. You don't necessarily need to have that to look like a woman.
Yeah.
And a lot of women buy our clothes. We just try. You know, we don't want to do specifically different things because I think it changes who we are. And it changes who we then think we have to try and sell that to.
Mm.
But for sure, a lot of women buy our product. That's and we're cool. very happy for them to do so.
And I'm not surprised by that one bit, to be honest with you, because I think, I don't know if the right terms, I'm not really down with the kids, David, shall we say, in terms of what to pigeonhole looks and categories and genres. But
yeah.
like the oversized yeah. and the full cut look, I do believe has been back in the mainframe now for a good couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've got a skill set that would ever let me really design properly women's wear. I think we design what would traditionally be a more masculine set of clothes, and I think that's working for us, and people seem to like it, and for sure women will buy into it. And partly that's because right now it's kind of a cool fashion look as well.
Mm.
But a lot of women have worn these sort of clothes for decades and been very happy with it.
That leads me on to another question. Because I guess we come in cycle with fashions, you know, things go quite skinny and yeah. then they come quite full cut. Trousers get low rise
yeah.
and now double pleated trousers up to the midriff are, you know, can be in vogue. Now that we're kind of swinging all the way back to full cut, are you seeing any other brands lifting from your designs or taking inspirations from your collections at all?
I'm not sure I'd be the right person to comment. Yes, I mean, for sure, people that have made skinnier silhouettes are suddenly making them less skinny, and that's just fashion. And of course, we're all influenced by fashion, and we're all influenced by what's around us. You know, there's a lot of there's always a movement, and right now it's definitely a little bit looser than it was. That's come to meet us head on because we've always done a looser silhouette and probably always will. But that's not to say that you don't get affected by what's around you, and our silhouette changes. You know, it's probably looser than it was a few years ago, even though then people thought we were making baggy trousers. You should see that some of the things we offer now. So I think you do move. Other people doing similar things, great. If they're looking at Universal Works and following it, I'm hugely flattered and honoured that anyone thinks they should follow us.
Mm.
In terms of... it's a trend for sure. But I think, you know, a lot of people have been buying. There are certainly many silhouettes in our collection that were in season one and we're in season 22.
Yeah. Nice.
So.
David, I'm conscious I've had you on the phone now for a good while, but I really wanted to ask you about how it's getting on in Cold Drops Yard, because I was there for the launch, I believe.
Really? Okay.
And that was, I guess, 2018, it might have been a little bit later, but it was brand spanking new. For people that don't know or have not heard of Cold Drops Yard, if you're coming to London, you're literally going to be on the doorstep of Cold Drops Yard. As soon as you get into King's Cross or St. Pancras, you're a stone's throw away. And some of the actual architecture that's been going on in these buildings is absolutely stunning, done by the Heatherwick Studios, I believe. And you can come in and see these old Cold Drop buildings that used to be docking ports for trains that would come in and unload all their coal and then bugger off again. And anyway, so much history. I'm sure you already know.
And you know, on a personal level, I think when we were first introduced to the project and you know, the buildings were amazing buildings built to bring coal from the north to keep London warm. You know, it was where the coal from the Midlands and the north of England was dropped off. That was then, you know, burnt in homes and for industry. And I thought, for me, it had a sort of personal history because I'd always been coming from north of the Midlands to London regularly through my work and business, working for companies in London, but going back home up to the Midlands. I'd always been travelling from those train stations and seeing those buildings, and you know the only ever use they had was for raves, or for many years certainly. So when the development started, it just really struck a personal chord as someone that had worked in the Midlands coal industry, many, you know, not for very long, but I did. And it felt like if there was going to be someone who had a store there, we should be part of it.
Yeah.
So we took a bit of a prayer and a wing for us to have taken that on when the size we are with a, you know, building a store within in that space was a huge investment for us, massive investment.
I bet.
And I think, you know, for us, we're really happy to be there. It's a fantastic development. It's a really beautiful building. And there's very, very, you know, the work that Thomas Heather did is stunning. And the whole place has a fantastic feel about it. The Centre of St Martin's Fashion College is based there. Mm. It's one of the world's best fashion colleges. It's right on the doorstep.
Yeah.
There's really good small independent businesses, as well as one or two bigger companies. Mm. But it's a great mix. And it's year two of a, I don't know, 20-year project to make that place a really important part of London. So it's not always super busy. It's not always perfect, but it's really, really cool place to be. And we're really happy. And we think we've got a really beautiful shop within that space. So we're very, very happy with how it's gone in the first year and a half.
Yep.
So yeah, so far, all good.
Great. I told you before, I've been in retail for a while, and I know
the
how laborious it can be sometimes to do shop fits, and how you know it's kind of like up at the crack. You go home at 4 a.m. You know, everyone's working to a deadline. And I walked into your store and just thought, this is what a shop fit should look like. It's got that big mirrors at the back that kind of hide some of the storage, but completely elasticate the space.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, we were lucky enough to have had a couple of really talented architects to work with who were fans of Universal Works. I met the guys in the store when they were coming in to buy things. That, you know, they were saving money up to come in and buy a suit off us, and I really liked them as people, and they really understood us as a brand and as what we stood for, I think. So they did an amazing job. And I think, you know, we're so proud of that store. It looks really, really cool.
It does. And so the whole place has got this beautiful romance to it. Alexander McQueen used to do early shows there in some of those buildings.
Yeah.
And
indeed.
So if you are coming to London, people, if you've not checked out Cold Drops Yard, please take the time to do that. Check out Universal Works. Universalworks.co.uk, the website people can go to. Universal-works is on Instagram. I hope I've got that right.
Underscore.
Sorry, I screwed that up.
You'll find it. They'll find it.
Lastly, I'm going to take a bit of a hard right here, David, but one last question I had for you. What are your thoughts on the current state of digital marketing and influencers? And the reason why I'm asking you this is we spoke about how I did a video previously and, you know, I was wearing a lot of stuff and tagging and then whatnot. I think I reached out to a couple of press people and they said, look, thank you so much for doing all this. We don't really do much work with influencers, but obviously we'll keep you on our file. And I was like, oh, brilliant, excellent, great. I'm guessing now with a welter of people on social media tagging you, you must get a lot of requests for people wanting to be brand ambassadors.
We do get a lot of requests. And I think we've always had the same opinion that we try and treat everything in the same way, whether you're a film star or your average Joe. If there's a reason for us to get involved with something or with a project, then of course we will take it seriously. But we've never really worked with any influencer or given away product to as placement for anything ever. Mm. It's just not what we do. We're not really interested in what celebrities are wearing. If someone I'm a fan of wears Universal Works, I'm utterly thrilled and delighted. But at the same time, you know, most all of those cases, people come into our store and we're like, oh, wow, look, there's whatever, you know, David Bowie, unfortunately not anymore, but, you know, there's a famous guy, but they come in and they bought things in our store. And that's hugely rewarding for us, but we don't seek that out and we don't chase it and we don't send gifts to people or use influencers just because I think you guys out there in the world understand what it is. They know that if someone's just writing about our jacket because they've been sent it, it's not real. And I think people appreciate the fact that we try and be honest and real. So if someone's wearing our jacket, it's because they want to wear it, not because we've given it to them to write about it and then they'll get another jacket off someone else next week. So for us, it's never really been something we can't kind of put it into our heads and say that's amazing, that works. I'm sure it does for some brands. And certainly on a commercial level, there are parts of the world where it's really important. But for us, it's not something that we seek out or do. Sorry.
No, please don't apologize.
That's where we're at with it, you know.
No apology necessary. I love the philosophy of that. I've just got to tell you a very quick story that's happened to me in the last couple of days. There is an influencer friend that I have, and I won't be naming any names here.
No.
But I was tagged in a post recently because there's a brand out there that is just about to launch their new collection. Now, the previous collection, my friend, this influencer, and I say friend, I know him virtually, he bought the entire collection, you know, literally just bought every piece in the collection, did an unboxing, did the whole prestige on Instagram, plugged it, and it was actually really well done. It was really well curated. But he's never had anything given to him by the brand. And he's never been invited to any parties or launches or anything by the brand. So now come season two of this collection, he's decided to take to Instagram and say, hey, what's up, brand? You know, did I not do enough for you last time? I think I influenced pretty much everyone I know in my circle of friends to go out and buy your products. Now you're doing this new collection. So I realized right there and then, this that is a microcosm of what must be fantastic and terrible for brands with relationships to social media. In one instance, you've got a guy that's going out and buying the collection, telling everyone how great it is, doing the exact fit. And on the second hand, he now thinks he's got an established relationship with you because he's done that. And now he feels entitled. And now he wants to be in the loop and he wants to be in the parties and the launch events. I don't know how, like, if this ever swings back to you, if you've ever had any of this where people come back and go, hey, come on, look at all the work I've been doing for you. I used to just like the days where you'd go out and buy clothes and you wouldn't ever feel, I mean, I never felt like I had a relationship with a brand like 15 years ago, but when I went out and bought something, that was it. I might have a relationship with the tailor or the guy behind the desk, but never with the brand.
I guess at the end of it, you know, we're making garments. We design and sell clothing. And, you know, without the sale, we don't have a business. If you're just creating interesting things, but you're not selling it, it's not a business, it's art or something. So for us, we need to sell product. But we want the product to stand up and for us to be proud of it. And we want to have happy customers. And for sure, you know, if someone's a regular customer of ours, why wouldn't we want to invite them to a party? Of course. But if someone's an influencer, it starts to be like, how does that work? Where do you draw the line? Are you, you want to buy it? You don't want to buy it? You just want to gift in and you want to talk about it? It's a very difficult process to go through that is ever going to be a relationship that you want on either side. So it's a really, you know, it's become the new PR. So rather than sending your things out to some PR agency, you're sending it to some influencers, trying to get your product in front of more people, of course. And we're all doing that. Absolutely. We're in the business of selling things. But it is a hard one to, you know, when you start talking about the relationship you have with the brand, it's really hard to know, isn't it? Because we want people to like what we do and we want to be decent and honest about it. And I think if you're giving it to an influencer, then at very least you've got to say, we're giving this to the influencer to influence you guys. Otherwise, you're trying to do something dishonest. So the whole process is a bit murky and difficult. And
I think that's the exact word.
I guess if someone, you know, wrote a massive piece about our next collection and influenced hundreds of people to buy into it, I might send them a free beer. because that's very nice of them. Thank you very much. I'd be very appreciative. But yeah. what do you do as a brand? Do you keep sending them things the rest of their life? You know, what do they expect, and how do I value it? You know, it's difficult.
It's a very strange time we're in, and I think I'm in a position where I've seen it from multiple scales. So I'm kind of in the influencer world. I have a lot of insular friends. I would never call myself an influencer because I just don't like the term. I've been from the brand's perspective because I'm friends with a lot of people within the brand trade, and I've also been in the retail trade of selling these clothes. So I kind of have like this 360 view on it all, and I've never seen anything like this at this moment in time. But anyway, maybe a discussion for another day. David, thank you so much for your time. Yeah. I've had you on the wall now for nearly an hour. I really appreciate it. Thanks for putting up with the technical difficulties earlier on. Once again, people, universalworks.co.uk, not just in London, not just online. By all means, go online and check out where all the stockists are internationally. So,
We've got a lot of them these days. The names and addresses are all on the website. There's lots of places you can go shop.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Okay, David, I'll let you get on with your day. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks again.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bye. David Keat there. Thank you, David, so much for coming on. And we had a whole bunch of technical issues. Believe me, I had David on the horn for over an hour, and it was a bit of a nightmare, but we got there in the end. I hope you guys enjoyed it. So, again, the website, menswearstyle.co.uk, that's the place you go to find all the articles, interviews, competitions, and the member area that I spoke about before. Thanks for listening, sharing, doing all your reviews on iTunes. That means a lot to us. It helps us get the podcast up the charts so more people can listen to it, and it encourages us to do more of these interviews. So until next time, people, remember, it's only fashion, and you're never fully dressed without a smile.